you tell us a little bit about your work and how your personal experience of fleeing persecution has shaped what you do?
I left Cameroon at such a haste.
Mm-hmm.
Effectively, I was a victim of human trafficking, and I ended up in Russia. And the Cameroonian embassy in Russia refused who I was. So they said I was in Nigeria. But the Nigerian embassy could not accept me because I was a Cameroonian. So after 2 years, 2 months of being a complete destitute, I managed to obtain a Zimbabwean passport, and I finally came into Wales as a Zimbabwean. Anyway, I was lucky enough to be introduced to a company called Literature Wales, and at the time they were doing a one-day workshop on the theme of literature and trauma. I have ever since I've published 6 poetry anthologies. Basically, I've been engaging with other people who were victims of circumstances, who left their country at such haste, and who were seeking a new abode. My writing is based on literature and trauma, but how to use literature as a means of overcoming trauma. So I engage with different members of community groups, and they help me achieve this aim.
I understand that you dedicate part of your time to volunteering as a creative writing teacher with people seeking asylum. For you, in what ways is the writing process, particularly poetry, a helpful or meaningful thing to do for people in this situation?
You see, I'll put this into perspective. You know, especially in European societies, when you talk to people about movement, people think about the pangs of labor, of moving homes, moving your property from one small city to another city. But movement for asylum seekers, refugee, it's so traumatic that it's not only about the initial displacement. So it's not only about you losing your home. It's about that journey. Some of it is treacherous, some of it is climbing mountains, some of it is crossing the seas. But there's that constant need to seek peace and finding none. So there's that, it's a continuous trauma until the point of arrival. Now, be it in Greece, be it in Malta, be it in Wales, for example, the fact that you've arrived at a destination also is the beginning of another trauma. So you have linguistic barrier, you have sociocultural barrier, and you have people who've developed this kind of mental barrier that integration, there is no room for it. So now, how do you start making these people feel accepted in the new abode? Okay, so you use different emotional triggers. So for example, one of my workshops is I use pictures. One of my clients, one of the person who attends my class is an Eritrean asylum seeker. Now the only familiarity he has between Wales and his country Eritrea is the smell of coffee. So every time he goes into a coffee shop, even though he cannot afford to buy this coffee, smell of coffee reminds him of home. So there's this permanent tragedy that people don't understand. People think the idea of fleeing home is an aspect, and the idea of arriving in your destination means settlement. However, it's a constant trauma that small little things can trigger this trauma. So I use this aspect. My work is not based on making people to relieve their journey trauma. It's about looking at familiarity. So for Abdul, it's the smell of coffee. For my friend, it's the fact that when he was in Gribolli prison, the guards put them not to fight. It will give one person a toothbrush and the other person a toothpaste. So the imagery of a toothpaste and a toothbrush takes this person to when he was in Gribolli prison. You know, those are the things that I work on. I'm not a therapist, I'm just somebody who believes in the power of literature, the power of speaking.
Given that issues around forced migration are often so controversial, do you think there is something about poetry as a form that can help to inspire empathy, understanding or action in the reader?
When I was a boy, when I was about 9 years old, my mom said something to me that has, it's only now that it's making sense. feather, when two elephants fight, it is the grass that suffers. Okay, but it never made any sense to me. But now if I look at the geopolitical situation in the world, we see that in Syria, it's not just only one or two elephants fighting. There are many elephants fighting. You know, in Yemen, in Sudan, in Eritrea, there are all of these different elephants fighting. And the grass is you and I. See, so for me, my political shoelaces are still undone. However, you can tell a lot about the society in the way it treats its artists, its writers, its poets. I look at this human migration now, not from a political viewpoint, for that that is not my strong, but from a literary creative perspective. You see, I have this lady in my class, and she doesn't understand no word of English, but she performs perfect poetry in a language called Bakuri language, which is part of Bantu. So she will be like, simply, it's something that, see, most of these people, when they travel, the only thing they have with them is their memories. They don't carry household items, they don't, because of the trauma. They only have their memory. So when this lady stands in front of an audience and she remembers this song that is an ancient mystic to her, that is the only thing she knows. So she tells her story, not because she's been traumatized, but this is my memory. It's like myself. When I first came into the United Kingdom, into Wales, I wanted to talk about why it was that I left my home at such a young age, why is that I became a victim of human trafficking, why it is that I ended up in Russia. But you see, I met this wonderful writer, and he said to me, Ngale, in some societies, silent is gold. You know, talking is silver. But simply answering yes or no to a question is tantamount to decapitation. And he said, here in Wales, your star will shine, but not under the gallows. So it wasn't about politics or anything. It was about that human connection. And so language, poetry, literature, it's a wonderful tool. And I encourage people who come into my classes to, whatever they want to write, they shouldn't be afraid.